Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bowlology Report. It's a big one. As usual, we're going to be talking Sheffield Shield cricket, IPL, WBBL, the summer of cricket. How's it going to look in this pandemic in Australia? Joining me as always, the co-host, the captain of the Victorian cricket team. He's out of quarantine. He can't wait to get in there and rip it up. It's, of course, Pete Anscombe. Pete, how's your week been?
Slim, we're out. The boys are out. It's not good. That 2 week quarantine, like it was better than we expected, being able to train and do all that and still get out. But it's the little things you miss. And obviously the first thing that we've done as soon as we've come out of quarantine is we had the 3 p.m. tee off time. We were straight to the golf course. And straight out there. So it's fair to say there were some rusty swings. I think a lot of boys had been putting in their hotel room. But so the putting was okay.
Wasn't too bad. Yeah. But
the full-blooded swing off the tee, just not quite the way we wanted it. And unfortunately, my first shot went out of bounds and into some houses. So that kind of that set my day up.
The thing is, I find with I haven't gone out and played golf yet. We've only just been opened up this week, 9 holes. But when that first opening up was in late April or May, it was amazing. I was playing really bad golf shots, but not bad cricket shots. So I was smashing them along the ground through the covers, which commentator, you'd just say, "Wow, what a great shot!" But in golf, that's adding 3 shots to every hole. Who were the major winners? Who was holding up the trophy at the end of the day?
Mate, John Holland is streets ahead. Pretty much anyone else in our squad. Sammy Harper gives him a good run for his money. Sammy's first shot went. We're all there. He had the gallery. He had the peanut gallery there watching him. He was the first tee off and smoked it 300 down the middle. And then just walked off with a bit of a strut. So, no, they're ahead of us by a long way, and the rest of us just tried not to break 100.
So Johnny Holland's virtually off scratch, isn't he?
Pretty much, as far as I know. I think he's 2, maybe.
Yeah, and Sam Harper, I know. I think he was part of the pennant at my club, Riversdale Golf Club, when he was growing up, and I know he hasn't played as much, but you don't really lose that. All right, who's who won the Nagger Award, or was it a group of you?
The Nagger Award.
Do you know what that means?
I haven't heard.
Not a golfer's arsehole. Can you name one name? It can't be you.
Can't be me because I'll be bloody close. Maybe Mick Lewis. He was in our group. poor Mickey. Like, I played some bad shots, but yeah, he was probably better than I expected, but he's still not a golfer's asshole.
Well, he was a very angry fast bowler. He had impact, I reckon, even before he played a Shield game. He was 12th man against Queensland, ran out of drink, sledged Stuart Law, who got out playing an angry shot. Laurie goes up the steps at the MCG, the old ones, opens up the door and just gives Mickey a spray. But Mickey's got us a wicket, and he's 12th man.
Yep.
And Laurie's so pumped up, and Mickey just as coolly as possible just said, Thanks for that feedback, Stuart. Yeah. Which just enraged Laurie even more. But with ball in hand, there was no – probably Shane Harwood had him covered, stickers, with anger, and Mervyn Hughes, my old roommate. But how does the anger go on the golf course?
Yeah, it came out, that's for sure. The old when you top a ball or thin a ball off the back of the green or something. And I mean, there was no snap clubs, but there was maybe a bit of steam coming out of the ears at times, getting a bit angry, but nothing like his cricket days, I don't reckon. I reckon he fired up a bit more back then.
Hey, and some great news. So you're out of the quarantine now. You're working towards Shield cricket. How are preparations building for the first training session?
Oh, it's a big training session today, Flem. The boys are excited. We haven't actually played. We haven't been able to train as a full squad this entire preseason yet. So this is going to be our biggest training session. And what's even more important is because we haven't been able to play as a squad, we haven't been able to play our normal warm-up game called soccer volleyball, which is probably bigger than the season. For us, we had a draft last night to get the right teams. You got your two captains. Normally there's a salary cap and players are worth a certain amount. And
this is gone.
You've got a bid for players and you can pay overs or unders.
So, Pete, who are the captains?
Mate, the captains are – well, they have to be different from the previous years. So this year we've got myself and Nick Madison doing the captaincy roles. We had the draft last night and picked – the best players get picked first. It's basically just like schoolyard rules as well. You work your way down the line. So Seb Gosh picked up first with Maddo and I went Will Pekoski.
So they're the two number one drafts.
They're the two. So
there's pressure.
Yep. And then that kid at the end that never gets picked on any sporting team, doesn't get the dodgeball team or whatever. It's probably Sammy Harper, known for his ability to have a triangle head.
Angle off the head.
Yeah, you just never know where it's going to go. Unfortunately.
See, I would have thought he was quite quick. Could use his feet, but if you're not heading, if you don't have a consistent header execution,
he's low to the ground as well. So that he should be pretty good with the soccer ball. But no, he's terrible. He's the worst I've seen.
Who's the best big man? You've chosen midfielders there. Who?
Scotty Boland's our best big man. Yeah. We put him up front, otherwise known as Big Boot. And all you got to do is just get it on a platter for him and he'll smack it. It doesn't come back after he touches the ball.
That doesn't surprise me. And what about the cricket side of things? So you've been in small groups. Yeah. So what's the build up to the Shield in about a week's time?
We've got a good net session today, which is going to be a nice hit out. And then we're actually playing a practice game against ourselves Saturday with a bit of centre wicket on Sunday as well. And that's to help us get a bit more time on feet, considering we've been sitting down for 2 weeks. And then it's just a pretty stock standard lead-in. You're 3 days out, main training 2 days, optional day before, and away we go. So we're starting again on Friday week. And Flem, absolutely pumped to get back out there and start playing some cricket. But I did see in my lockdown, because I was watching a fair bit of cricket, I saw a highlight from the FAI Insurance Cup.
Geez. Yeah.
That popped up on my feed, mate. You want to take us through that?
Where do you sit? I mean, you're on the road there. Where do you sit with mullets?
Well, I mean, I've got a – I'm not
– Yeah, you're getting that.
I'm getting a little one, getting a bit of a flame at the back here. So, yeah, it's not – Look, I'm all for him. I reckon it's your hair. Do whatever you want, mate. And from what I saw, you did do whatever you wanted.
No, I had a bit of a crack, and you know, you got to remember mid-late 80s, and particularly me growing up in Springvale, you know, that was just part of uniform. If you walked around Springvale with a shortcut and, you know, back and sides, you know, you're just asking for trouble. So even that mullet was about halfway down my back. You just fit in Springvale. Probably not so much, you know, in the Victorian team. You know, there was little fluffy mullets. Merv had just cut his, but I love just looking back and seeing someone like Jamie Siddons, who's been as bald as long as I remember, and he's got a mud flat.
Yeah, that's the best one. And I only know Jamie Siddons as a bald man. And then, there's something pops up where they've actually got a bit of hair and a mullet. And mate, it's just great. Great to see that stuff.
And skin-tight uniforms too, which was fitting in with the 80s that, you know, you might, particularly with the Fabergé's jeans, like skin tight, the flannel shirt, that was the way to go. I was the first person to wear bike shorts to training. Bike shorts had just come in and they were nothing as cool as these days. So I rocked up with these black bike shorts that went down to my knee.
Nice.
No short though.
No short.
T-shirt, and mullet.
That's rogue. That's showing that's a bit rogue. More than you probably need to show.
And what's worse, I wasn't driving at this stage, so I was getting the train. So I got the train. I got this massive cricket kit. People are, peak hour. People aren't happy. Taking up heaps of room. Mullet and bike shorts with no shorts. And then I'd walk from Richmond Station, and often Merv, I'd hear this beep, beep, and he'd pull up at Brunton Avenue.
Yep.
And I'd just get to the door and he'd wind down the window and go, "Hey, mate, make sure that the beers are cold at the end of the day," because I was 12th man. I'd still have to walk around.
Yep.
But it's funny, a lot of people love that nostalgia. You know, I show one of Merv, I remember sledging this guy, a guy called Walker from Queensland. I think it was his only game. And in the end, he knocked him over. And Gary Watts took this great catch, to knock over Boof, one of the ones I post was Boof Lehman with a massive mullet.
Mm.
Massive mullet. People didn't know that.
No, he had some hair back in the day. Yeah.
So good times with the retro cricket, but let's progress on with the current day. With Pete, can we do it?
Let's do it. Well, let's go. We'll go straight over to the IPL. Just a couple of things since last time we spoke. The IPL has just basically turned into super overs and a heap of firsts. So, firstly, there's a super over a couple of nights ago with Kolkata Knight Riders and the Sunrisers. And that's where, and Lachie Ferguson just came in 2 for 2. And then the Knight Riders chased at 3 runs off that final over. Of that super over, so that's not the kind of super over you want, Flem. The kind of super over you want is when you get another one.
Yes.
And the next night, Mumbai Indians and Kings 11 had twin super overs. Unbelievable.
That's never happened before, has it?
Never happened before. That is a first. First time in T20 cricket to have a draw after a super over.
Yeah, I didn't know super overs could be trendy, but it's funny. You get one, you get a few.
Yeah.
But it's such a pick. I mean, it's been an outstanding IPL anyway, hasn't it?
It really, really, really has. What I found interesting about this second super over, because we'd never seen one before, I didn't know that the rule was if you bowl the first super over, you're not allowed to bowl the second one. And if you get out in the first super over, you're not allowed to bat in the second super over.
No, those rules have changed.
Have they?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, that
probably need to get on top of that.
But that does bring a different element, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was impressive. I still can't get over it, mate. Two super overs in two games. Just awesome. Awesome that these close games happening over there.
And it's funny with the performances, we're talking about the fast bowlers last time and we expect the wickets to, deteriorate and spin. But the quicks have continued to, Ferguson's come in and had real impact.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, batting wise, a lot of the local Indian players, you know, KL Rahul and Agarwal and those type of players have continued to run. All the overseas is AB de Villiers and Du Plessis.
But in terms of the local, Shikhar Dhawan is in unbelievable touch. There's another first man ever in the IPL to go back to back hundreds.
Incredible effort. In T20 cricket.
Yeah. It's hard enough scoring one. It's hard enough getting it, let alone
in your career.
Yeah. It's gone 101, 106, not out in two games. Just unbelievable. Just slapping it through covers over mid wicket. Like he's beautiful to watch.
Sugar. Yes.
Lovely, lovely batsman. Bit stiff as well a couple of weeks ago not to be involved in the mustache 11.
But you gave him a mention. Yeah, and Jadeja. I think and when you talk local, I mean he's a Victorian local, isn't he? He's out at Fountain Gate.
Narre Warren boy.
Narre Warren, yeah.
Somewhere out there. So he's I think we can claim him as one of ours.
Geez, we might see if we can get him on. Yeah. He's on fire. Yeah. But also, does it say to you, for the Indian cricket team, how much white ball depth do they have in their batting?
Yeah, ridiculous. They could put out 3-4 international teams and do very, very well. Their fourth one would be something ridiculously good. So, no, the depth in India, well, I mean, we know cricket in India it's a religion. It's the biggest thing that they can do over there. You go over there and kids are playing it with anything that they can. So,
yes,
they're training right from as soon as they can walk. So, it just shows because this IPL is crazy with the amount of talent they've got in there.
It's probably been happening for a few years, but I think we are seeing the impact of the IPL. That the young kids that would have watched the 2007, 2008 edition, I want to play T20 cricket and smash the ball everywhere.
Mm.
You know, that's happening. And a lot of their players straight out of the under-19s are doing well, aren't they? Just adding to the depth.
Yeah, and almost growing up with the sole purpose of playing T20 cricket, not so much the longer format. Like they've honed their game or trained their game for their entire life to be able to slog the ball, to be able to clear fences.
Yeah, but it's interesting with these young players that, you know, the Kohlis, they might be introduced with T20 cricket and they'll just adjust their game to be great 50-over and test match players. I think Indian players, well, really, I think most nations will be able to do that. But it's interesting looking at some of the stars of this IPL and they haven't played much domestic first-class cricket or even 50-over cricket. So it's backing up what you're saying. There's going to be still a generation that concentrate on T20 cricket, but I still think there's going to be enough kids that and players that are just more suited to the longer form of the game, test match cricket. But it says the beauty of cricket as opposed to other sporting codes who are trying to find a T20 type format is we've got three formats.
Yep.
You can be a gun at all three, or you can be a gun at one and still be an international player. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and you look at – so you get the polar opposites there, but you look at someone like Pujara, who I don't think he's ever played T20 cricket. He's never got a contract, but one of the greatest red ball batters in the world at the moment. So he's making a great career as a purely a red ball player. And then at the other spectrum, you've got these young kids from India coming up who hasn't played a red ball game but getting good money and good contracts, playing in the IPL and giving themselves a chance – to get on the T20 circuit and potentially go around the world and make a good living doing it that way.
Oh, bloody oath. Hey, mate, what are you calling? Who's going to win it? I mean, Delhi and Bangalore, you know, are setting themselves up. Chennai Super Kings for the first year ever. I mean, they're not miles behind. They're last, but... you know, they'd have to win and win well. But it's such an interesting format, isn't it, that you've just got to make the finals. You know, I've seen too many T20 competitions where a team's particularly in a top four, you know, come fourth and one batsman gets flying. Like I see with Rajasthan Royals dropping Butler down.
Mm.
You know, he's the type of player that can just get on fire in the finals and win it for you. But Dally and Bangalore have been fantastic.
Dally's the one for me. I mean, I spoke about it when we were talking about Stoinney. They're like what he's doing in the middle order for them is ridiculous. Now they've got Shikhar Dhawan going back to back hundreds up the top, and Shreyas Iyer coming in the middle. Like their batting, I think, is so strong. And then they've got Rabada with the ball. So the thing is with Delhi is that I think they've got match winners in their team. So all they need to do, Flem, like you said, is kind of get to the finals, which they're going to do, and then one of their players will win them the game. It's just kind of that's kind of how T20 can happen every now and then. It's not so much your team performance, but it's a short enough game where one person can have such a great impact and take the game away from the opposition.
Yeah, definitely. I think have Dally ever won? Did they win it early under Greg Shippard? Have they ever won it? Because they had some really bad years, didn't they, Dally?
Yeah, not sure, but I know Ship used to win a lot of trophies. So
yeah. But yeah, Rabada is the leading wicket taker. Even Ashwin and Axel Buttel, finger spinners.
Yeah,
you know, not massive wicket takers, but good economy rates. So you know, they're in there. So we'll keep wrapping up the IPL. What's next, mate?
Well, next we'll come back home. A bit of Shield cricket has started since we last spoke, and oh, it's great. It's great. I've actually been really jealous just sitting in the room watching these boys out there playing. But it's great to see. And it started with an absolute bang, mate. Hundreds and just fifers. 4-day games going right down to the end.
Brilliant.
Bloody awesome. But from the first round, I mean, you got two blokes, Nessa and Ashwin Agar, to both get 5 wickets and 100 runs. How often do you see that? And then we've just seen it twice in the first round of Shield.
By the time I finished a tweet congratulating Michael Nessa for it,
yep.
Ashton Agar had just got his third wicket, fourth, and then fifth in there. And I mean, what's exciting is, you know, players setting up the whole summer, but, you know, pressure on that Australian team, but also they're not, I still don't think they're genuine all-rounders at test level, but, you know, it is a spot that could be available, I think, isn't it? A bowler, you know, who you hope could average high 20s, you know, early 30s.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, in that all-rounder position, there's still like Mitch Marsh and Marcus Stoinis who aren't, you know, playing at the moment in Shield cricket, so not being able to push their case that way. But it's good. I think the depth of our all-rounders in the country is looking really good with both Ash and Michael there getting great starts this season.
And then obviously, you probably would have had it further down, but we might as well do it when we're talking about all-rounders. I mean, we're just so excited about Cameron Green, you know, 400s in 11 or 12 games. But I first saw him bowling, so I went, wow. Have a look at this guy.
Yeah, you know, my first
6'5", genuine pace, over the top, out swingers. You're just going, well, you know, he's just going to play for Australia as long as his body holds up.
Mm.
And then he slogged a few in his first game. You go, oh, okay, a lower order hitter as well.
Yeah.
He's punching out first class hundreds for fun, Pete.
He's got about 4 now or something just in the space of, what, 10 games maybe. And just... Yeah, great. Like same as you, Flynn. The first time I saw him, I was facing him in the nets. I was like, geez, this guy's big. He's got bounce. It was up in up at the academy. I was like, he's going to be a good bowler, shaping it nicely. And then, to see him come out and get just first class hundreds for fun, it's awesome. He's showing some scary talents and definitely putting his hand up there for Australian selection. That's for sure.
Yeah, who else excited? I mean, spin has been, you know, Swepson helped Queensland get there. I'm encouraged by that. You've already mentioned Ashton Agar.
Yeah. the one that stood out for me was the first time ever a leg spinner has taken 5 wickets on day in the first Shield game, day one first Shield game in Popey, in South Australia.
Yes. Yes. So, I know he leaked a few runs in this game, but, you know, he's wronging.
Yep.
Geez, it rips late. It reminds me a fair bit of Stuart McGill's. Mm. But he's still really young, Popey.
Yep.
So I'll be looking more at the wickets column than the runs. So, yeah, that's fantastic because it is one that we probably don't feel like we've got depth, is it? That the spin, you know, fast bowling, we could probably lose a couple and still be really competitive. Yeah, probably middle order batting where you're slotting in, Pete, get a few hundreds there. Oh, yeah. You know,
that'd be nice, mate.
But I think there's, you know, up to 10 blokes who could catch fire and fill those roles, but spins
and
really, really tough.
Speaking, and going back to Swepo, did you see that field that he had?
Yeah.
Right at the end, obviously, to win the game there in the last few overs. I mean, he bowled 46 overs, 45.2 overs because he got the final wicket. To have control after that long, like my shoulder would fall off. It nearly fell off when I bowled 9 overs last year. But for Swepo to keep coming in like that, 4 for 66 with everyone around the bat is extraordinary because he has the control to be able to put those players around the bat. So that was exciting to see. It was entertaining. But I'm going to pump up one of my own boys, Flem, and I say I'm excited to see John Holland bowling again as a spinner.
Yes,
he's class as well. So, you know, maybe with these wickets, we're seeing a lot of spin wickets at the moment. You know, I'm hoping that the duck is going to be pretty important for us.
Yeah, definitely. And what about and some other news too? You know, Tim Payne, who sat on one first class 100, I think for 15 years. You know, got a second one last year, but got runs. I mean, you know, we definitely want to hit the summer with the Australian captain in form.
Mm, yeah, exactly. That's great to see. Payne coming out. It looks like he took it back onto the bowlers nicely, put pressure back on them, scoring at, you know, roughly or close to a 50 strike rate, maybe about 45. So it looks like he's trying to score, and I think that's when he's batting his best and in some form. So it's a good start.
Hey, and one little sneaky one I've enjoyed watching is Big Bo Webster bowling fast medium.
Yep, and getting wickets.
It looks good, you know. Tom Moody made a choice, you know, midway through his career to bowl medium pace, and he got games on the park, particularly in one day cricket. Yeah, a hitter. He was better than that in first class cricket, but big, tall, fast mediums. I mean, your captain, you'd love it if one of your batters could provide a bit of that.
That's awesome. And that's the thing. He's so tall that he's got a bit of margin for error there with his bowling. So he, not that he did though, like he pretty much came in and hit the top of off most times, which is what you ask of your full-time bowlers. So
it goes for 4. Tremoyne's in shock and Brisbane are up in arms. They're loving it. And here comes the team. They've won the title.
Starts in 3 days. Oh, good. It's get a bit more cricket happening in Australia, and good to see the girls back out, being able to play after, you know, a pretty entertaining series against New Zealand with the Australian women's team. To now go into the WBBL off the back of that, it's going to be good. And there's a bit that happened. I think a big move was Sophie Devine to go from Adelaide to Perth.
Massive.
That's a big, big loss and a big gain for the Scorchers there. I mean, we all know that she's capable of winning games off her own bat and scoring runs, taking wickets. So I think that's going to put Perth right up there in terms of one of the
lost Meg Lanning. So almost to get what I know they're not, you know, Sophie obviously bowls a lot more than Meg, but if you're thinking, oh, geez, we need to replace a giant of the game, the Scorchers have done a very good job there.
Yep. No, they've
recruited experience too.
Yep. Now she'll be able to teach or help, you know, teach a few of the younger players and get their games going forward, which is also what you want from an experienced player. So, no, that was a great pickup from Perth. And then obviously you mentioned, Meg's gone back to the Stars. So that's going to make them, that's going to make them a strong team as well. I mean, just off her own bat. She can win games after a bit of a disappointing year for the Stars last year. I think she'll come in. And
it's been a few years, Pete. It hasn't been happening. We're rebuilding. Not now. I know I'm biased. I've just got the Melbourne Stars winning.
Yeah, okay.
Meg back, the English imports, Annabelle Sutherland.
Yeah.
I reckon we're going to go. Are you supporting your Hobart Hurricanes?
I'm on the Canes, mate.
You change allegiances so quick.
Mate.
You've got green in your blood.
Mate, cut me open, I bleed purple. I did have a little look into the Hurricanes girls, not knowing them overly well, but they've basically got an entire new squad by the looks of it. A couple of injuries hurt them. And not being able to get Heather Knight to come back from England is a big loss for the Kane train, mate. But I've got Nicola Carey doing some good things for the Hurricanes this year. I think she'll take the that controlling role to control the innings with a couple of big hitters around her. I think she's going to be big for him.
Well, I also thought she bowled quite well at the death in the New Zealand series. You know, that was a new role for her with Elise Perry out. So she's a very good cricketer. So we've worked that out. Scorchers are all improved, but it's a Stars versus Canes final in the WBBL. Hey, mate, I had one for you just to finish up. In, Owen Morgan and Holder from the West Indies come out and, just talked about bubble life. You know, I don't think us fans really know, how much it can potentially take out of you. I mean, you've just got out of quarantine and you've got some weeks to go. But, it's going to be tough on the players, tough on the administrators actually scheduling these games. And really until we get a vaccine, there's going to be bubbles involved.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, with borders being restricted between states at the moment as well, making travel really tough for us, but then also, worldwide. If you have to leave to go to a place to quarantine for 2 weeks before you can play, you're already you're behind the eight ball, because being in a hotel room for 2 weeks, whether you can train or not, is just it is tough. It is really, really tough. If you don't have a good structure around you or some good mates that you can call up and talk a bit of shit with every now and then, just to try and keep you mentally sane. But it's a lot of time on your own, and I can see how these hubs and these bubbles, all over the world, could cause a few issues that maybe we haven't seen just yet.
Yeah, and there's a mental and physical component to it, but also the different competitions. I think with something like Shield cricket or even Test cricket or a One Day series, you generally, unless you're totally new to the squad, you've already got mates and there's support. The coaches are the same, support staff are the same. It's T20 competitions, particularly if you're an overseas import.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the friendships. You're not going to have the mateships, straight away and you're quarantining. So, I feel like some of the T20 competitions, particularly if they're not on massive money going forward, the that are going to be hit by players either not putting their hand up or being late pullouts.
Yeah, I can see players pulling out. You know, maybe having after playing a couple of tournaments somewhere and just not being able to go through another quarantine, or having not been able to go home for 6 months because if they go home, they have to quarantine again, and then they have to quarantine when they leave and all that. So, yeah, I can see some of these smaller competitions copping the brunt of this a little bit. With some of the big international stars probably opting out for a couple of tournaments.
Yeah, and we're all waiting out. Hopefully by the next Bowlology report, there'll actually be a schedule for the summer because it's a moving beast, you know, Everland, yeah. Queensland, government, Cricket Australia, you know, they thought things were already stamped and ready to go. It looks like New South Wales government have come to the party, potentially some games at Manuka as well, which could work. I mean, we're sort of lucky with our facilities here. I mean, Hobart's put up their hand as well. But, mate, thanks a lot. Enjoy training. Enjoy the next build-up to Shield cricket. We'll be talking probably after your next Shield game. But on a serious note, with your soccer volleyball, which team did Sam Harper end up in?
He ended up on my team. I got the final pick.
So where do you play him?
Well, I'm playing him front and center, but purely as a decoy. He's to make fake runs here and there, but we're not to pass the ball to him.
Yeah. We'll make sure we get him on next time for an update there. Yep. Mate, I'm going to catch up to keep our theme 11. I'm catching up with comedian Matty Hardy.
Very nice.
Who, you know, is a famous author. Great stand-up comedian. I'm not sure what he's got in store for us, but he's a great storyteller, and hoping he tells a story about streaking at a district final.
All right. Well, that sounds.
I don't think there's many of them. Good luck, Pete.
Thanks, Liam. Thanks, mate.
Come on, Aussie, come on.
All right, it's theme 11 time. It's been a lot of fun over the last few weeks. We've had beer 11s, hate 11s, mo 11s. What have we got in store this week? Well, we've got a comedian, a great comedian writer, one of the first Aussies to go over and smash the UK live stand-up scene. He's an author of one of the biggest selling books in Australian history. I'll say that, Saturday Afternoon Fever. Go do yourself a favour. Also producing DVDs, I'm So Australian, and I'm talking, of course, about comedian extraordinaire St Kilda fan, Matty Hardy. Hards, thanks for joining us on the Bowlology Report today.
Mate, I've made it. Those little plaudits you've offered from the dim, dark past, yeah, wow, I'm a bit relevant. but they're nothing compared to, honestly, genuinely being on the Bowlology Report with the bowlologist himself. Honestly, I'm really proud. I'm really wrapped. I've got a couple of my mates that are going to think that I'm not worthy of this, and I would agree with them. But, you know, it's quiet times during a pandemic, and if you've got a call on me, I'm here for you in my daughter's bedroom, and they've got their own photographic come art gallery in the background. As you can see, you know, the positioning is it's perfection. You know, I think they've just
and we can already see a bit of St Kilda flavour about it, Matty.
The old school, the old school Saints pub 70s mirror that you could, you know, get given for your 13th birthday by a drunken uncle. Perfect. It's a family heirloom. That's probably all I'm gonna be able to leave them. You know, when I head to heaven, but you know, they should be appreciative of that pub mirror, my daughters.
Oh, definitely, mate. But we're gonna go with cricket. So before we get in your theme 11, what are your memories of cricket growing up? Were you a cricket player yourself? You know, who were your idols?
Well, first of all, this got me into cricket. That's the original. Forget about any remakes with like Shannon Noll. The original single of Come On Aussie, Come On, right there.
No way.
Yep. And look at that flame coming off the ball. Obviously, a West Indian speeds did a little bit of that. And then, so it was the merchandise that got me in it. First of all, the song, which was done as a promotional single, and it worked, you know, here in Glen Waverley. with my brothers.
Come on, Aussie, come on. We're talking exactly. about. Yeah.
And then Peter's Ice Creams gave you posters. Right? And there's Hooksy, right? But not only that, like if you bought, I think, four packs of, you know, Barney Bananas or something, and you kept the coupons, you sent in and you got the Peter's, where's the logo? The Peter's poster. But you got double value for your money because there was like on the backside as well is Kapil Dev in his classic bowling style as the action. Wow. Yeah. So that's
so
what
you could just.
It was the merchandise. There's Peter's.
Yeah, yeah. So was that around World Series cricket time, Matty? I mean, that's when I remember cricket. Yeah.
Well, it was when Macca's came up with the two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese on a sesame seed bun, and you had all the cricketers. You would also get World Series all the team posters with the bright sort of primary coloured outfits of the time. They called it the pajama game, didn't they, at the time?
Yeah.
And, but all the cricketers, that was, I think, maybe the first. Now you've got a current test team with like VB, you know, brand alignments, as they call it. But back then it was just an excuse to buy crap and, you know, create a bad diet habit for children. But if it meant you got a poster, you know, or a sticker, I was all there for it. And our parents were too. But I'll tell you
what. Matty, do you remember the poster of every member of World Series cricket? Yeah. Who was sitting right in the middle?
Sounds like you know, but I can't recall. Was it Larry Gomes? But, who? No, oh, Ronald McDonald. Yes. Who'd he play for?
So all the boys, all the cricketers have got that serious competitive face on, and in the middle there's big Ronald with his big face with a big grin.
That's right. The worst wig since Dougie Bollinger. Ever seen in the cricket context. But before all that, the great all time was, look at that, the original test match, right? And now, obviously, later came the incredible little plastic fielders bent in position in the slips.
Yes.
But this was the one, right, where you'd have to like move this thing to your left and right. Oh, it's all busted.
That's
and then
right.
Up in this little up in that little window would be the sort of raffle-like score that you got. So that was the original test match.
Mate, I remember playing that now, but I would have thought the first game I'd got were the ones with the little figurines and the bowler where you flick the metal ball.
Yeah.
But that was the originator, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the originator. And basically you would break it because you'd be under the illusion that if you move this semicircular thing, you'd have to like move it around and then move it back again. And there'd just be like a lucky dip raffle as to what score you ended up with. There's obviously pre-war technology there, but you know, you or your brothers would like just try and under this false impression that if you moved it as hard as possible, it would be a you know bigger score, and it wasn't. You usually guaranteed LB, you know, the harder you swung. So it's kind of mirrored real cricket, didn't it?
Well, no need to ask what you've been doing in lockdown then.
I've finally been making up for those bad losses against my brothers in their absence. In my own mind. And then you had this, right? That is the testimonial, $2 it cost. That would cost 20 nowadays. And that was obviously to commemorate, I think, what was his final test. Now, there is a one-day cricket outfit.
Oh, my God.
Look at that.
I've got that here at home as well.
Have you? It's sacred. Forget about the Dead Sea Scrolls or, you know, the Shroud of Turin. This is a Dennis Lilly testimonial document. It should have been written in parchment. And that's him with the great Richie himself, of course.
That's when he passed the record.
It is. And then Scanlon's, who we all know for the then VFL footy cards, attempted a go at cricket stickers. And here we got, you know, the ones that I bothered to put in there.
I've got it as well.
Look at that.
What have you written on the side there?
On the side? Where's that? Oh, Matthew Hardy and me address. But, you know, of course, I can't show that address for too long because my wealth will be stolen by the envious
scammers. Soul.
Yeah, exactly. There's Sandeep Patil and Syed Kiamani there. Yeah. So there's these kind of artifacts that at the time, you know, Lenny Pascoe, Derek Randall, Graham Dilley, the great Terry Alderman.
What a bowler. What a bowler.
You can see in the background an English fan about to cave his jaw in. Look. So, yeah, Jeremy Coney, Ian Smith.
There was, yeah, what a great commentator, Smithy.
Yes.
These days. Probably not as fit as that particular photo there, Smithy, but I agree, that's what got me, and they were like superheroes, and the biggest man, the man of steel for me was Dennis Ealy, personally.
Yeah.
What about yourself? Who were the main men for you?
Well, DK was like, you know, the Marlboro man and Superman and your dad and your footy coach. He was like the ultimate macho man, to quote, you know, the village people. What sort of, has there been a more masculine example of manliness in our history since? You know, I can't think
of it. And charismatic, a bit like Paul Hogan with the comedy of that time. Right.
Yeah. And Nuke.
So John Newcomb epitomised the era. And, you know, certainly we don't have that these days, do we? Like everyone's a bit
homogenised.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. We just need Pat Cummins to grow that moustache because I think he could do it.
But D, I believe in you, and I think that's true. But DK had the like built-in sort of like physical trademarks that I don't think he even meant to do. You know, like you've got the Kiwi umpire that did that weird signal of the, you know, of the six, or the signal
Billy.
Of the four. Yeah, right. They're kind of affectations. They're kind of forced, you know, like Charlie Cameron with his kicking the goal for Brisbane Lions. But they're kind of forced trademarks. But Lily's
choreographed.
Choreographed. But Lily's, you know, mopping of the sweat and flicking it. Every kid did that at the end of the long run in the backyard. You had to.
And to this day, we've got the fast bowling cartel. You know, McGrath and Cashwich, Gillespie and Lee and Mitchell Johnson and Cohen. You know how we... You know how we greet each other?
It's always
with the DK.
Do you really? Wow.
And he used to lick the fingers before he put on the ball.
That's
right. And then what about the chain
with the chest hair? The chest hair and the chain bouncing. Yeah. Great. Like what a great man. And the Mo, the first original Mo. Unbeatable, unsurpassed, unparalleled moustache. What a man.
So
and what about the chassis on him? The big DK, because when he made the comeback from that debilitating back injury. And he was doing, I think he hired a then famous Olympic running coach to strengthen his back.
Austin Robertson Sr. Yeah,
that's right. And he'd always be photographed, you know, sweating bullets with his shirt off. And you go, what a man. He is a man.
So, Matty, this is your idol, right? How did that transfer into your game?
Not at all. Nothing. No. Maybe when he threw the bat, when he threw the aluminium bat. Right. After whoever it was protested correctly, after you heard the clang of the ball hitting it first time, when he chucked the bat, that was how Lily was incorporated into my game because, if you got called for an unfair caught behind in the back garden, you chuck the bat over the fence. Like if I'm not batting, nobody is. Right. I'd have to hope you didn't clout the neighbour hanging there washing on the line and then be in big trouble. That's it. Maybe when he kicked me and dad in the ass, I probably did that to my brother, like in some sort of tantrum as well. So, yeah.
I've got no doubt about that. any Ashwood under 12s, 14s, 16s? Did you turn pro or not?
No, I didn't play at Ashwood, but I knew a lot of the blokes that did, including, I know Gary Lyon played at Ashwood. I know you were mentioning that as a suburban example, but and the late, great Dean Jones, of course, and Paul Rifle.
Yes.
And a lot of greats from the actual Ashwood, but no, I played for three teams and didn't get a bat or a bowl, right? I was making up the numbers and I didn't know whether I was okay with a tennis ball in the garden, but I didn't know with a real cricket ball. It was on mats, right? But I didn't know if I could play with whether that extra second of pace or firmness from the ball was going to suit my hand-eye coordination or not. But it was the fourth team I played for, Oakley Districts, where our two coaches, we had two blokes coaching, was under 16s, and this hired sort of white van rocked up because the coaches weren't there for my first game. And then this van rocked up, and I didn't realise they'd all been on this all-night bucks turn, and a bunch of blokes like physically pushed out. They slid the, like the old post office vans, they slid the side door of this white moving van that pulled up beside the ground. It was still moving, and they slid that slide side door open and pushed the two coaches out, like onto the ground. Gravel rash, right? And one of them spewed. I won't name them. And so my mate's dad, who drove us to the game, and that's the first time I met my mate's dad, he then said, you know, some stuff I can't repeat to these two blokes about the ability. And he took over the coaching for that day, and he said to my mate, who was wicketkeeping, why don't you give your mate a bowl now, about six overs in? And I was on a hat trick after two balls. Oh. Yeah, and then I went on to win, like, the team bowling averages, the competition bowling averages. That was from under 16s. Then I was good at 17. And then I discovered beer and girls and nightclubs and life. Yeah.
Yeah. Like most 17-year-olds, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I was ordinary, but I did win trophies, and I've still got them. I'm surprised I didn't bring them to hold up and prove. But also, that was when indoor cricket was massive, which we know the great Steve Smith was a exponent of, because his parents owned an indoor cricket warehouse, or whatever they would call the stadium or wherever indoor cricket was played. But I was brilliant at indoor cricket, which pretty much sums up the height of my skill level.
And just for the young listeners, that's the original Steve Smith, who used to get hundreds opening for Australia in the early 80s.
Oh, no, I meant the current Steve Smith.
Oh, the current one.
He was too young, but his parents owned an indoor cricket joint, and Steve Smith would sit up on the high chair tennis style and umpire.
Guess what? I did not know that, but the original Steve Smith played for Australia in indoor cricket.
Did he? Well, yeah, I remember.
So that's why I was linking that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because I think he was a one day opener with with Jeff Marsh, just before the sort of, you know, superstar era arose, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was just before him, then he went on the Rebel Tour to South Africa.
Oh yeah,
but
game over.
In one day cricket, I think he averaged about 40. But indoor cricket was massive. I grew up in Springvale. We had nothing in Springvale South. But then an indoor centre got built 500 metres away. It's still here to that day. So, you know, we had a new place to hang.
Yeah, it was almost like 24-hour games. Like you couldn't get shoved off at the end of your game quick enough before the other guys. And that memory of pulling the sort of canvassy lip back.
It was to climb
in to the almost UFC-style ring, because they had the sort of flexible netting on either side.
And how many times did the same guy get set up by letting him in, then letting it go, and then he got smashed?
Yeah,
by about 500 kilos of mesh and
wire. Fantastic.
Hey, another mutual mate, Josh Marquette, who was in the Victorian squad when I was playing, went on to play heaps of games for Tasmania. He's moved back to the area around near me here in Ashburton, Ashwood. But you're good mates with him.
Yeah, I was, and we lived in Beringa Street, Mount Waverley, and there was three guys actually paying rent and about 13 other guys refusing to or unable to or unwilling to. And so they would come home and we'd already be broken into their own house, right, emptying their fridge, emptying their fridge of food and booze. And they were like reluctantly a bit shitty about it, but they'd, you know, happy to have this whole combination of blokes playing like on this mini snooker table. The now well-known Damien Barrett turned up for The Age, because there was this wave of adulation started heading Josh Marquette's way at the time. And they said there was an article written in which Merv Hughes, Alan Border and Dean Jones named Josh Marquette, who'd yet to debut in state cricket but was blitzing for university in district cricket, the fastest white man in the world. And this is after Dennis Hickey had been labelled that and done his back. And I'm not sure if the South African Alan Donald had retired at that point. This is about 87. But, we were in the photograph.
He was just coming on the scene.
So it was just pre-Alan Donald then, yeah. And so...
Yeah, and I reckon he had a pre-season with the Vics. He bowled very fast.
Alan Donald did.
No, Josh Marquette.
Yeah, he did have a pre-season. Yeah. And and as I say, talk about putting too much pressure on a kid too soon. But he'd yet to play state cricket, and he literally had Border, Hughes and Jones quote him as the fastest white man in the world. No, but then he did his back like good and proper, unfortunately. But the photograph in The Age with the then journalist Damien Barrett, we were all, maybe including Josh, drunk at about 3 p.m. on like a Tuesday. And Damien Barrett was asking us to move, you know, visible evidence of this party lifestyle out of the frame. But he agreed to give us a mention by name, and to his credit, he did. All these suburban Bobo idiots got a mention in the paper. And that was probably the beginning of the demise of Josh's progress. He did his backlifting.
Unlike yourself, unlike yourself, Matty, he's a man of few words. How hard an interview would Josh be?
I think it was a struggle. I think maybe we helped actually fill the word the word count. That's probably why Barrett was happy to give us a mention. But Darren Berry told me once that because Josh went and played professional up north of England for a while in Clitheroe, and they gave him a groundskeeper job as well, you know, to supplement whatever the professional cricketing payment was. But Darren Berry reckons that he was so lazy because in England, you know, they've got those. You pull the light switch on and like on a dangling string. And he reckons that Josh tied a second and third and fourth string, like a elephant's trunk holding tail's chain of shoelaces tied together so that he could just turn the light on and off without like lifting his head off the pillow. But I mean, I only faced him in the hand, but that was just, you never saw the ball. You know, he was, from my experience, fast bowling. Josh was brilliant. The pace on him, unbelievable. And size of him. He's a big man.
Good momentum. Yeah, didn't use his front arm a lot, but he played a fair bit for Tassie. But back to Victorian district cricket, University Cricket Club, who he played with, they had future CEO of Cricket Australia, James Sutherland.
Yeah.
My roommate at the time, Jeff Allardyce. Ian Wrigglesworth, they had a really good team, but they won a district final, but you had impact as well. Can you talk us through that?
Well, it was at the Junction Oval, and of course we were mates with the great Josh Marquette, and so we went to watch, and there was some sort of six, maybe nine over period. I think Craig Bradley and or Graham Hick were playing for Carlton against him that day. Am I right in that memory? And
Josh Bradley, not Graham Hick, but Craig Bradley probably.
Yeah, right. Anyway, there was sort of like a standoff. No, there was no runs and no wickets being taken. And we'd had a guts full of grog. And I'd driven my EH wagon, my first ever car, from Glen Waverley to the Junction Oval. And then had about, you know, a dozen cans with the boys and was a bit edgy and was always had a mouth on me anyway and was never short of ideas to create the... to create action, and so I decided I was going to streak. And but it was summer, so I basically had like footy shorts on and a T-shirt and thongs, right? So I went down the players' race, didn't tell any of my mates, down the players' race as far as I could where that old school wooden door was like locked shut, but just out of sight. It was a pretty big crowd for the district final in those days. And took off my T-shirt, took off my shorts, the VFL Saints shorts with the like logos, you know, lined up down either side, and me thongs, and sort of held them in a fist, and then just started sprinting. And James Sutherland was about to come in off his run, and I went between the batsman at the non-strikers end and Sutherland, who had to stop his run up. And I don't think I'd met him at that point, so he just looked at me with like disdain. And the batsman, like, you know, I think it was Craig Bradley, like, turned around and make a big thing of, you know, I'm trying to focus here. And and of course, the crowd went berserk, right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
But I remember to this day, I'll tell you what, if you haven't been a streaker, do it. It is the greatest. It is the most magnificent. I mean, you've played, you know, in World Cup winning finals, but for me, the most incredible sense of freedom and liberty and just like I'm naked in the open air in front of people. My feet weren't touching the ground and I reckon I would have done Carl Lewis in the 100-meter sprint, right? Anyway, it was unbelievable. I'm almost getting goosebumps thinking about it now. And that was way back in, what, 1990 or something, but I was blind.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then I jumped the fence up the other side and ran through a few, you know, hooligans that were trying to like grab me or kick me in the bumhole or, you know, give me a clout around the ear or high five me. There was all varying reactions. And there was blokes mouthing off at me on the field, the players, including Sutherland and Anderson was the other bowler. Unhappy that I'd, you know. But anyway, then they took, I think, two wickets in the next two balls. And I was hailed the strike breaker, the hero, the partnership splitter. So then I passed out in my car, like very drunk, went into my car, which was parked on the other side. Over on the sort of on the punt road side of Junction Oval, passed out of my car. I wasn't going to drive home, And then got shaken awake by my mates going, they want you in the rooms. They've won. They reckon that you're the good luck charm. And so the uni went on this like week long, day after day, night after night drinking session around all these Melbourne pubs. And all the now wealthy businessmen alumni of Melbourne Uni would turn up and were slapping hundreds on the bar. And so no one bought a beer. And I was almost like the talisman, like the mascot, the little Shetland pony that accompanies the Arabian thoroughbreds to the Melbourne Cup to be a little friend for the flight, right? And it was out of control. And then it led up to this big sort of like celebration evening where they asked me to give a speech because I was starting to do stand-up at the time. And that was going well until an incident I'd rather not recall.
You went through the players, though. Can you, in particular, remember?
What you said about... I'd gotten to know them after this, like, week-long drinking celebrations session, and I remember going back to different players' houses each night, and all of us would crash, all of us would crash there, the hangers-on, adoring girls, some of whom were already partners with some of the players, some of whom you'd met that day or that night and just come back for after-party drinks. But I remember the REM song Losing My Religion was just everywhere at the time.
Yeah.
And so all of us knew all the words. It was like a permanent – anyway, but, yeah, so I'm giving this sort of roast. They asked me to give a roast of all the players who I'd only gotten to know pretty much outside from Josh that throughout that week. And and James Sutherland came in. He was like a latecomer. And by this point I was on a roll. I was doing well, if I say so myself. And James Sutherland came in and I go, oh, look out, James Sutherland's turned up late. I said, you've turned up by yourself. Oh, that makes sense. What do you use for a contraceptive? Your personality, right? Absolutely brought the house down, okay, apart from his face didn't seem to express a sense of appreciation for my assessment. And, but, you know, where's he now? What became of James Sutherland? But he's not on the biology report talking about me. No. No, sir.
No, he's got to write a reply next week.
Has he? Is he on next week?
I'll get him though. But that was awesome.
He's looked after to his credit, he's looked after me over the years, the various bits of media I've done. Whenever a Cricket Australia's needed, you know, a professional idiot, I've been given the shout out. And at different times if my media windows were like slowly shutting on me, I'd give James Sutherland a little quick email hello and he'd throw me a bone. So he's a great man.
No. I mean, he wouldn't give a lot away. Good sense of humour, James. And I guess what he's got, though, you know, what I love about his oldest two kids at the moment, James is comfortably the worst cricketer in their family. Will and Annabelle are going to be superstars. We got you on to pick a theme 11. What have you gone for?
Yeah. A genre of cricketer that's always fascinated me because I think they're relatable, and that is the ordinary all-rounder. Yep. So blokes who are not good enough in either of the batting or bowling disciplines, right, to get a game in their own right, but just good enough in both to sort of create a hybrid, justifiable selection capability. You know,
because that
for me made him relatable and almost accessible because you go, oh, I'm ordinary at cricket too. It's just I'm ordinary at everything, whereas they're okay at most things. I mean, some blokes, which I think we're going to talk about, some blokes I would include part of their all-round abilities or collective skills to be fielding. Some blokes I reckon were picked because one of their attributes was fielding. It wasn't necessarily batting and bowling, but almost like they were a fielder first and foremost. And if they could do either of the other.
It's a bit like your start of your cricket career, not batting and bowling, fielding. So that's right. The relatable. Hey, what are the names? Go through a couple.
Right. Well, the names are the first one, of course, is Simon O'Donnell, because I'm a Saints supporter. As the pub mirror in the background, you know, confirms. And Simon O'Donnell was like everybody had heard about him as an AFL or then VFL footy fan because he was coming from the great Assumption College, right, in Kilmore, where legends had, you know, that was like the breeding ground for superstars. And what
he kicked 100 goals twice.
100? He kicked about 300. He kicked so many goals. It was unbelievable. And I've dug this out of my scrapbook, right? Talk about the pressure on Josh Marquette. Kid Coleman, right? There he is, the assumption jumper. Yeah, the great sod, Scoob, right? That's him, right? Look, Kid Coleman.
Comparing him to John Coleman.
Before he played a game. It's like Josh Marquette being the fastest white man in the world. So that's in my Saints scrapbook, okay?
I've got one of those too.
But then he turned up and he was huge, Simon O'Donnell. He was 22. He was a very, very big boy. But it was early, it was apparent early that, courage wasn't necessarily his strong point, right? I think he's later admitted it on a regular basis. But at the time, it was immediate.
Hence the nickname Scoob. Scuba diver,
because that came, as he is told, better than me. But I saw that game. It was at the old Arden Street. And North in the, I think, late 80s were thrashing us this day. Gary Dempsey had taken like 27 marks and it wasn't even three-quarter time yet. And Simon O'Donnell was on Phil Carman and it was pouring with rain, right? And back in those days, when those grounds got muddy, they got muddy, right? And the mud would stink, right? Like stagnant, it was just horrible. And Phil Carman, I think, threw an elbow back and might have just clipped Simon O'Donnell. And he was getting a hiding off the latter day Phil Carman, now at North, I think, which is his third or fourth club at the time.
Yes.
And you could see, even as a 10-year-old kid, he took a dive face down into the stagnant, stinking mud. Simon O'Donnell had stayed down and they brought the stretcher out. And apparently before that even like got through the race to the actual rooms, Simon O'Donnell had jumped off and went right into the showers for me now. Like it was too muddy. He was getting too much of a hiding off latter day Phil Carman and just basically waved the white flag. And so then his teammates called him Scoob, as in scuba diver. I saw the dive. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was.
My memories of Scoob, I sort of remember that. I used to just go to VFL Park because I lived in Seaford. My nana used to take me there, and not just for Hawthorn games, any game. And it was the day he played on Ross Ditchburn.
Oh, yeah.
The
West Australian. That's right. The West Australian full forward out of nowhere.
Not all on Scuba. And he did take one good really hanger there, but. But as a cricketer, he was a great one-day player. So I assume you're talking more about his Test career.
Well, no, he didn't really. Did he? I think he made 100 on debut at Lord's in a warm-up game that was classified as first class on his first tour in England. But no, he didn't totally nail it, did he? I mean, I think we're thinking of a Test match 11, aren't we? But he didn't totally nail Test cricket. But if 2020 was around. If Simon O'Donnell was around, he would be the greatest 2020 player of all time. He had a brilliant slower ball. He could disguise it well. I think he almost used to do with the way I tried to bowl slower balls is he'd try and double bluff the batsman and do the grunt like it was going to be faster, like he was putting in extra effort and then kind of just let it go and the trajectory.
Crafty.
Yeah, big slower ball. But obviously when he went the long handle, they stayed hit. He middled them. The sound, you know, that sound when a batsman, I mean, as a bowler, you would unfortunately have had that happen to you. But yeah, that almost sexy sound, if you're a cricket fan, of the complete clap right in the middle of the bat, where
he's the longest straight driver that I've ever seen off fast bowlers. He flat batted them straight off up there. Marshall holding.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of state bowlers. I mean, they've got that seat at the G in the second or third tier where he hit Greg Matthews.
That's right. But you know what's weird is his immense courage when facing the West Indies fast bowling cartel was in direct opposition to his less courageous football abilities. And what I meant to say is on debut, I mentioned his cricketing debut, or at least in England, where I think he hit 100 in what I say is classified as a first-class match, but wasn't a test in the warm-up games. I think I'm right there. But his first AFL or VFL game, he got knocked out by one of your greats, one of the Hawthorn legends who played, 4,000 games in Michael Tuck. Michael Tuck KO'd Simon O'Donnell in Simon O'Donnell. I don't reckon Michael Tuck ever hit anybody before or after, on or off the field.
So, you know, in his 400. Yeah.
Managed to annoy him to the point of needing to be knocked unconscious on debut.
Michael Tuck, over 400 games, reported once.
Yeah.
Hitting Simon O'Donnell.
Yeah, on O'Donnell's debut. And I wonder whether, because Tucky was a famous tradesman from like Cranbourne area, I wonder whether O'Donnell was a private schoolboy from Assumption was the antithesis of what Tuck saw as a, you know, a like-minded man. But
I'll get Tucky on next week to pick an 11 and answer that question. All right, who else do we got?
Well, I reckon Roger Binney, who I think was the I think he was the original idea creator for the great Billy Birmingham's 12th man, who Rubbish Binney, if you remember.
Yes.
Right? So I reckon that's Roger Binney's claim to fame, who is a very ordinary all-rounder.
And when you say that, we're talking about guys who didn't average over 30 with the bat and averaged over 30 with the ball, and he fits into that criteria.
Yeah, and there's so many teams, as we know, are just yearning for an all-rounder that the amount of guys that have been given a chance under false pretenses is limitless. It's endless. You know, then we go to back to Australia, Glenn Trimble, if you remember him.
Oh, wow.
Who on debut, yes, a blonde, good-looking, almost Robert Redford type, suntan Queenslander. And I remember him bowling his first over for Australia in a one-day game, and he couldn't hit the pitch. Obviously, the nerves got the better of him. It happens, not that often, but when it happens, it's under the glaring spotlight of, you know, national or international TV. But I think he bowled three or four balls that either didn't hit the pitch or bounced three times. And it was his first over was to the Kiwi captain, Jeremy Coney, who chucked his bat in disgust, like, who is this person I'm supposed to be batting to when he's not even able to deliver the ball within the acceptable, you know, parameter.
If he'd been temping bowling, they were gutter balls. The tough thing is, like, he was picked as he was a very good first-class batsman.
Yeah.
And because he was a big dude, like you said, he just happened to start bowling and got some wickets, but he had no confidence of 10 years of bowling. So I reckon once he bowls that first wide, it's carnage.
Yeah, it was real wide, wasn't it? It was almost harmless.
Really felt for him.
Yeah,
but about six of them.
Yeah. But the others that I recall anyway, it was bouncing two or three times on the way. He just obviously, the synapses weren't sparking. But imagine if that was you, even now, 30 years later. But at the time, you just want to swallow yourself into the turf. You want to try and find one of Tony Gregg's like cracks, you know, living forevermore. Poor bloke.
Next pitch report. Yeah, there's wide cracks and there's Glenn Trimble. Yeah, well, I like it, Tony.
And when you mention the 10-pin bowling perception, that leads me to Trevor Chappell, who deliberately bowled a ball along the ground to Brian McKechnie, who also chucked the bat. Geez, what have we got against the batsmen of that era? And Trevor Chappell, I think, was one of the ultimate ordinary all-rounders, and he was one of the guys who was, I think, picked first and foremost for his fielding abilities. He's a brilliant...
Great fielder.
Yeah, great fielder, but an ordinary bowler, ordinary batsman, but played a lot of games. Yes, there might have been nepotism. Apparently had a brother or two that weren't bad, Trevor.
Yeah, I can't recall that, but right.
But Trevor Chappell, he was almost, he could almost be a contender for captain of the ordinary all-rounders 11.
Ooh, big call, but I'm comfortable with it. Who next?
Well, one of my favourites was Larry Gomes, right? So he almost looked like the son, Cosby's son-in-law from the Cosby Show, right? he had this weird sort of afro. He looked a bit like DeBarge. If you remember a guy called DeBarge,
that was
like a sub-prince, you know, had a couple of hits.
The Rhythm of the Night.
That's right, right? That was Gloria Estefan on it. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Hey, who am I to know? But Larry Gomes had this little mo. He was kind of like cute. He was small. He looked inoffensive. But boy, could he bat, and he offered a point of difference. You had big thundering Clive Lloyd. You had, you know, the master blaster in Viv Richards. You had Greenwich and Haynes. And then would come in this guy. Yeah, and I think when Gomes came into bat, a lot of bowlers thought this is our chance for an easier wicket. And they were usually wrong. And similarly, when Larry Gomes came on to bowl, I think they thought this is our chance for some respite after six or seven or eight or nine speedsters in a row. And they were caught by surprise by his little partnership breakers.
I just think they thought, instead of facing 50 bounces in an hour, we're getting a slow off spinner that doesn't turn him in our half. We're going to slog.
Yeah, but he was deceptive. And they'd probably, their eyes were too big for their belly, as my mum would say, if I couldn't finish my ice cream. And they'd go too big, they'd go too hard too early and end up getting their castle knocked over by little Larry Gomes, who was just innocuous. He looked like, you know, it wouldn't harm a fly, but... he was just good enough for maybe two or three years to get a game in that great West Indian team.
He averaged over 50 against Australian tests.
Oh, I thought you meant in his career, which would have disqualified.
But I think you've gone into one day territory with his bowling, because back then teams who didn't have all rounders tried to steal 10 overs. So they'd try and steal 10 out of Larry.
Yeah.
Australia would try and steal 10 out of Kepler Bessels.
Kepler Bessels. He was
his bowling terrible. Wow.
Kepler Bessels was one of those blokes you'd bring on to try and squeeze an over in as the cameras on the TV would start showing the clock going, is there 3 seconds before the that's when he got a bowl. You know that? What do you call that? The lunch break bowler. Squeeze another over in. Doesn't matter how, because they'd have a short run, you know. They wouldn't spend time polishing with the flannel tucked into their waistband. They'd just get
90-second overs.
Yeah, 90-second overs, right. Wow.
All right, who's next?
Well, I think Mitch Marsh. I mean, he still could be anything. Oh. But the big bison, as they call him, he's got a head on him, isn't it? You know, what the size of his skull.
Hence Bison.
Yeah.
He's comfortable with it.
But, I mean, he has played some blistering innings. You know, when he puts his shoulders into it, that bloke's like a wood chopper. You know, and he's bowled, you know, in the last Ashes series, he bowled a couple of spells that were incredible, but it's just whether he can string them together, you know, on a regular basis, because obviously the selectors, he gets a lot of lip. I like him myself as a cricket fan, but the selectors love him, because imagine if you could get him to align the planets and have, you know, his best batting and his best bowling at the same time a long time, we'd be unbeatable.
Well, if that happens, he's not in this 11.
That's right.
Injuries have hurt his bowling and his batting. You know, I talked about Simon O'Donnell hitting him long straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mitch is not far off that, but the body that happened, and comfortably the best bowler in his family. Yeah. Jeff and Sean are horrendous.
Speaking of going the bash and hitting him long, New Zealand's Lance Cairns, obviously the father of Chris. And I think other Kansas, but you're not in Kansas anymore, right? But Lance Cairns, right? Both his body and his cricket bat had the shoulders angled off. Remember that? He was the first bloke whose bat was modelled on his body. But Lance Cairns looked like a shearer. He looked like a shearer that had taken his Terry Towling hat off and just been handed a lump of wood. You know, it looked to me like, does he know which end to hold? But his eye-hand coordination, if he decided just to go for it, they stayed hit. And he had that weird double-armed looping delivery when he bowled, and the sort of the Max Walker shuffles, tangles, sort of feet tripping over but never did type leg style. But I don't think anyone knew where the ball was coming from when he delivered it. Because he would loop both arms.
Another one I reckon you mimicked in the backyard. You tried to bowl with that
action. Oh, yeah.
You know, the beautiful Dennis, Tomo, Maxi, Bob Willis, but you did the Lance Cairns.
Yeah. Well, I think he was underestimated, but again, he wouldn't have got picked as batsman alone. He wouldn't have got picked as a bowler alone, but he was good enough at both for the combination to be worthy of selection.
What about that day he hit 50 off about 30 balls? I mean, he was hitting Dennis Illy for sixes one-handed when it wasn't roped in.
The audacity, the gall of the man. Yeah, when it wasn't roped in. I mean, there's conjecture about whether the assessments of batting averages should be adjusted, because not being roped in mattered back then.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, keep going. We're getting in the middle order, lower order now.
Well, I thought maybe Phil De Freitas, but then we had a chat earlier on, and on the reassessment of his stats, he was just too good.
Well, I reckon we could almost get a team of Englishmen who were the next Botham. So I just thought we had to only pick one or two of them. And that took over 100 test wickets. He probably underachieved with the bat, to be fair. Yeah. But, you know, particularly in English conditions, he was a great bowler.
Well, in which case, if we're talking the next both of them, I think Derek Pringle had that mantle thrust upon him for a while. And then he's had obviously a tube of chips named after him as a legacy of his contribution.
What flavour would he be?
Oh, sour cream, definitely, especially if he's looking back upon his achievements, you know, on the whole.
Remember about Pring? Like, he's actually a really cool writer, and I read his book, which, as you met, was a bit that way, you know, Cambridge University, I think. He had two earrings. I'd never seen it before when he first come toured.
Remember in our youth, like, I'm not sure which year it was, but apparently if you had like an earring in one ear or the
in
other,
the right, I think
it might have meant that your sexual persuasion was favoring a certain direction. And I never knew which one was the correct one, but I never get any offers from either gender in my youth, so it didn't matter. I never found out either way. I could have been bi, but no one wanted the bi. Yeah, that creates all sorts of confusion, the double earrings.
Yeah.
Like, think about that, pal. What does this mean? Probably just means, we used to wear the hoop earrings.
He's a true all-rounder. That's what he is.
Do you know what? I used to go to a nightclub called Darby's in Caulfield, which half the then VFL players on a Friday night would be at until 3 a.m. And then you'd see them the next day, a couple of them would get three votes, you know, in whatever game they played, in AFL top level or VFL. Anyway, at Derby's, I remember my mates and I used to talk about copping an invisible punch, right? So he'd probably been a bit drunk on Southern Comfort and a bit mouthy or a bit annoying, and someone had you lined up over an hour or two, and then they'd throw one, you know, from an angle you couldn't see coming, and your head would rock back. He probably deserved a smack in the mouth. But I reckon now, in hindsight, it was a double earring thing. If you had a double earring, you got a free punch in the head. You know, that was just that was just a suburban equation socially, wasn't it? I've now finally worked out why my lips got split. Yeah, Derby's and the double earrings face. So then I want to go back to just onto the all-rounders again is Ken McClay, who looked from WA, and he was slim and loose-limbed, and it was a bit like Kevin Bacon from Footloose. But he had like almost the perfect bowling action, right? He almost sort of Dennis Lilly-like. And because he came from WA, I'd say that was a Lilly-like influence. But, yeah, he was very capable. Again, wouldn't have got selected in either of the batting or bowling disciplines alone. But the pairing of his ability in each area was enough for him to be like, well, I suppose, more of a one day. Did he even play a test?
It's funny just watching the World Series Classics on Fox. He's played a lot more games than I thought. There. Yeah.
Yes, did he? He was very good consistently. Yeah. And then that leads me to lower down the order, the Victorian legend himself, who still plays a major part in the cricketing scene, is Sean Grass.
Oh, Graffy, yes.
And he was one of the first ones to have that walrus moustache.
Because
Lily's moustache and John Newcomb's moustache had a half curl, right? And then some guys would only keep it just up in the upper lip area. It would never go below either lip. But Graff had the sort of Fu Manchu, you know, you'd have to expect if you saw him in a nightclub, you'd expect he'd have like a sawn off under his Dreiser Bone jacket type fearful gunslinger moustache. But he didn't really play a fearful gunslinger.
No, he was underbelly before underbelly, wasn't he? I've never asked Graffy why. Did he go the Fu Manchu?
He was Max Walker light. That's what Sean Graff was. diet tangles. But I had an affinity for him. Remember when you're a kid, you just grasp onto a player for some reason or other. And especially with me, I found the guys that weren't great to be more relatable. And Sean Graff for a while was like, you know, my main man.
Did being Victorian, did that?
Yeah, definitely.
Add a bit of it, yeah.
That parochial state, you know, based love was really mattered back in our youth, didn't it? You know,
and we didn't get a lot selected. There were like
for
Victoria, was there? Maxie Walker, Graham Yallop.
Yeah.
Graham Yallop.
That might have been it. Maybe Jim Higgs for a few games.
Higgsy.
Yeah, there were.
So I can understand that with Grappy. Yeah. Who move on?
Well, I wanted to put Greg Matthews in, but as you've reminded me, he had too big an average, didn't he, as a batsman in particular? 40.
In Test cricket.
Yes. Yeah, that's incredible. I mean,
that's not ordinary. That's very good. Yeah, he averaged more than Mark Waugh and Mark Taylor. What about that?
He did not. In what? In Test cricket?
Test cricket. You know who's not happy with that? Mark Waugh.
That is not true. Your viewers need to switch off. You are not telling the truth.
True.
Greg Matthews.
Yes.
I bet you he never mentions that.
The most is in there. The bowling average was a little bit high, but no, he can't miss 11.
Well, he got famous for the Channel 9 commentary team put together that edited clip of Hoodoo Guru's What's My Scene, if you remember. No. Or was it Like Wow, Wipeout? Anyway, either of the two.
Wipe out.
And because Greg Matthews, he was known for doing like weird dancing or distracting stuff to
playing the guitar a bit. Yeah.
Wow, that gesture looks different than what you intended. But yeah, and then they would put the clip together. And for kids at the time, that became, he was like a cult figure, you know, Greg Matthews, the sort of comedy cricketer. But
I've got a question.
Yeah.
I've got a question. You know how big air guitars got?
Yeah.
Air bass has never caught on, has it?
No.
No one does the air bass, do they?
No, because if you do the air bass, first of all, they do that weird, they hold their plucking hand too high. Kind of looks like they've got a condition that needs some kind of medical assessment.
Heart condition,
It almost looks like you've eaten your pie too hot or too quick, and you're just sort of feeling around to see if you need some quickies. You know, I don't think air bass, that might be why it hasn't worked. But
just something I asked. Yep, sorry about it.
It's a worthy thought, but for some reason or other, I've now got my focus on Brendan Julian. Maybe the most awesome, ordinary all-rounder of all time. And that's all due respect because I never played a first-class game, of course. And, you know, all respect.
He's a beautiful man. A beautiful man.
He's a beautiful-looking man. You know, like he looks like he could be a contender for the next James Bond or Clark Kent. What a handsome, tall, strapping lad.
When Baywatch, when we brought Baywatch to Australia, how didn't he get a gig? How not?
The Hasselhoff of Australian cricket. But
Julian.
Yeah, very handy. He looks a bit like Henry Cavill, doesn't he? The current Superman. But yeah, not really a master of either batting or bowling, but was the great Australian hope for a while there, wasn't he?
Well, a bit like what you said with Mitchell Marsh, you know, BJ's best delivery in swinging Yorker at pace.
Yeah.
He hit the ball once again, a bit like Simon O'Donnell, straight, massive.
Right. Yeah.
But the game never actually connected up Lego like.
Right.
It was just spurts of it, wasn't there? And a very good field for a 6'5" guy.
I think it's sort of, don't
feel sorry for him. You know, he's, doing pretty well for himself. Right. Big fella.
Great. Yeah. Well, he's had a long-standing media career and deservedly so. Now, he was a tall man. And so was the West Indian Roger Harper. Right? Now, Roger Harper, I think his nickname might have been Panther or something because he was stealthy in the way that he moved. He was cat-like in his reflexes. Oh. He could cover ground in the field. He could run out like lying sideways and backwards. He could catch like, you know, grab snatching flies out of the sky. He had the sort of low, deep-set eyes. He was a handsome man, and instead of
classic catches, it should have just been Rogers catches.
Yeah. Oh, the way. So, but I think
he took that many.
Wasn't he almost like a professional 12th man because they'd just pick him and then find a reason for one of the first 11 to need a toilet break, and they'd never come back from the toilet break because it was an excuse to have Harper out there in the field. He was an incredible fielder.
If you saw Gordon Greenidge limping and getting 100 in the first innings, you know Roger would be fielding a lot there. And then Clive Lloyd didn't like playing spinners, but I think they alternated Gus Logie and Roger Harper in the team and 12th man.
Oh, right.
Because
Gus Logie.
Gus was half the size of Roger, but equally as good a fieldsman.
He was like Kevin Hart, the comedian, or Caleb Daniel, the footballer, wasn't he? He was like a mini man. But not when it came to
awesome. Playing
cricket. When Gus Logie was on fire, wow. Just his name, Gus Logie, you know. But I wonder whether a future...
Augustine Logie.
Augustine. Wow, well, that reminds me of another all-rounder, Aldine Baptiste, one of your favourites, I believe. I mean, just his name. Sounds like he's the king of an empire. Aldine Baptiste. Unfortunately, he wasn't the king of either of the main cricket disciplines, but just good enough to get a game on the back of both.
Yeah, like really good, consistent player. I think he did really well in county cricket, but the one that stood out to me was he didn't bowl 90 miles an hour. He's probably bowling 80 miles an hour.
Yeah,
I didn't know the West Indies produced faster bowlers. Like, I thought their spinners bowled 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah. Eldin.
No, but I think he fits in here. I reckon he fits in definitely.
Yeah, he was bowling slower balls just by, you know, natural inclination, just slower than lightning. Yeah, that was the...
Compared to holding Roberts, Garner, Croft, Marshall.
Wow, wow. Patrick Patterson was faster than them all, but just a bit too erratic to, you know, be permanent. But there was
Dujon said that. He said he was the quickest.
Right. Oh. Yeah. And who's the... Who's the greatest all-rounder that you played with or against?
Well, we didn't have... Like, Australia really hasn't produced one, have we?
Not really.
Well, I mean, I'd say back to Keith Miller. No, you know, like, we've had...
As an opponent, even.
Who was the best? You know, Sean Pollock from South Africa. Yeah. Like, people underplay his batting. Like, he's technically really good, average 31. I sort of missed both of them and missed Freddie for England.
And Callis as well?
What am I talking about? Callis the best by a mile.
Yeah, right.
And he actually, bowling was underrated. You know, facing him in a one-day game, for some reason, me and Damian Martin put on a partnership and we'd face Donald, Pollock, Matini, guy called Hayward. Callis comes on, new beauty, and he hit the bat harder than any of them.
Oh, the old heavy ball. Is that not a myth?
And the heavy ball, and that's your number three bat, who averages 57.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So, hey, is that your 11?
I reckon that's the 11, of ordinary all-rounders.
I like that. I think it'd be equally competitive with another ordinary 11. I think the brilliant all-rounders 11 would probably smash him. So, Matty Hardy, thanks a lot for that. I'm just going to go back to reading Saturday Afternoon Fever and maybe even just viewing tonight.
Wow.
Matty Hardy, I'm so Australian. All right.
That DVD no longer available, but you could Google Matthew Hardy, I'm so Australian, and there's 3 minutes of gold, or at least aluminium, from
me. Can you not stream it?
Don't know. I don't think so. No, I think I was just before the technology, and I'm not really sure it's worth it. You know,
but I get it. Book, I think it is.
The book is a Penguin classic. You can buy that online. That said, I've got another idea I'm going to close with for a potential themed 11, and that is a runner's 11. Who are the best players, right? I don't know if you've done Night Watchman as well, but the best players
who
would come out if someone got injured and needed a runner. Write that down for future potential reference.
Watchman and designated runner. So generally I'll look at some Sri Lankan players when Arjuna Ranatunga was playing. That's what I'll do. Matty Hardy, you've been a superstar. That's the Bowlology Report. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Matty.
You're a legend. Thanks, man. Bye.
I am so Australian. I thought Mardi Gras was Glenn McGrath's brother.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.